Wings thanks Rebel Podcast Network for carrying our programs and urges listeners to contribute to their fundraiser. Please visit rabble.ca/donate today.
This is a Rebel Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Today on Wings, Feminist Fandom.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It's usually improper to say on the air, but here, bitch is a proper name. Bitch, feminist response to pop culture, started as a zine about 20 years ago. Now it's a website with daily online articles and weekly podcasts. This week on Wings, we feature two segments from the Bitch podcast series titled Popaganda. Segment 1 is about feminist adulation for a member of the U.S. Supreme Court. Segment 2 is an intensive interview with a feminist female gamer. The producer and host is Sarah Merck. Stay tuned.
Close your eyes and imagine thousands of screaming teenage girls. Just imagine being in the middle of the crowd at an Ariana Grande concert or a Taylor Swift show, surrounded by thousands of people who are filled with the desire to see and hear something they love. If you've ever been a part of a crowd like that, you know the power of fandom. Of course, it's fun to be a fan, but fandom can also be a powerful force. Fans are what makes the music and film economies roll. Fans can revive TV shows from the dead. Fans set the cultural tone of what's important and what's cool. And being a fan can really shape your identity. Fandom isn't just about something you like, it's often about who you are and what you want to support. Fandom can bind together communities and make us feel less alone. And that can be complicated. There's this great moment on an episode of the animated show Bob's Burgers, which, by the way, is a great show. This one episode really speaks to fandom. The character Louise is usually a cynical kid, and she always has some scheme up her sleeve and definitely doesn't have time for sincere, silly stuff like crushes. But when her older sister Tina drags her along to a boy band concert, in the midst of thousands of screaming teenage girls, Louise suddenly realizes she's a fan. A fan specifically of an adorable singer named Boo Boo.
Oh. That's interesting who you are. What about Boo-Boo?
Boo-Boo's the youngest, and he's got a really great voice, but he hasn't hit puberty yet, so that could change.
What's he into? Sports? I could get into sports. What the hell else does he like? I want to give him things.
Whoa, Louise, you like Boo-Boo.
What? No, Tina, that's... Okay, right! Like, I like a boy! You think he might like me? Oh my god, what's happened to me? Cut me open, I'm infected!
Realizing that she has a crush on a boy and is a fan of a boy band, just like thousands of other girls, throws Louise into an identity crisis. How can she like this thing so much? What does that say about her? On today's show, we've got stories that, like Louise's brush with Boo Boo, speak to some of the deeper issues about identity and culture. We look at what it means to be a gamer. But first, let's start in an unusual place for fandom, the Supreme Court. Supreme Court justices are known for being reserved. They're somber. Sitting on the highest court in the land is very serious business. That's why it's so surprising that one of the most dedicated and humble Supreme Court justices has recently become the center of pop culture fan phenomena. That would be the one and only Ruth Bader Ginsburg, maybe better known as Notorious RBG. When asked to reflect on her career at age 82, RBG doesn't talk about her important legal work with any fireworks or pomp and circumstance. Instead, here's her talking to Bloomberg News.
You've been working on issues of women's rights, gender equality for your whole career. As you look back What have you accomplished over the course of your career?
I haven't accomplished anything alone, but I was fortunate to be part of a revived feminist movement starting in the late 60s. And I was a lawyer with a talent that could contribute to that effort. And what was accomplished? It was a stunningly successful effort in this sense.
She certainly doesn't aim to be the center of attention. But in recent years, RBG's opinions on cases involving reproductive rights, healthcare, and voting laws have led to legions of fans. There are Ruth Bader Ginsburg t-shirts, nail art, tattoos, and a plethora of Halloween costumes. She has inspired multiple people to pen tribute songs in her honor.
Yeah. This song is dedicated to all the judges that told me I never amount to nothing because of my gender. To all the people that lived in their ivory towers that I was hustling in front of, that tried to buy me off by putting Susan B. Anthony on the dollar, yeah, and all the women in the struggle. Know what I'm saying?
It's all good.
It was all a dream back when I argued Reed v. Reed.
That one is called RB Juicy, a tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the style of Notorious B.I.G.'s Juicy. A musician named Jonathan Mann even turned the exact text of her dissent in the 2014 Hobby Lobby case into an acoustic cover song.
Religious organizations exist to foster the interests of persons subscribing to the same religious faith. Not so for-profit corporations. Workers who sustain these operations are not drawn from one religious community. It bears no.
On a recent episode of Comedy Central show Broad City, best friends Abby and Alana get into the RBG fandom fever, with Abby dressing up as a Supreme Court justice for Halloween.
Watch out, world, because I'm about to make a law passing that's important for humanity and women.
That is so baller.
Moomoo's.
Since when does a Supreme Court justice get her own sketch on Comedy Central? Well, the Tumblr Notorious RBG certainly has something to do with it. Law student Shauna Konishnik started the Notorious RBG Tumblr in June of 2013. That month, Ruth Bader Ginsburg had written a number of compelling decisions, including a victory for same-sex marriage and a scathing dissent to the court's ruling that key parts of the Voting Rights Act are unconstitutional. The Notorious RBG Tumblr collects and creates Ruth Bader Ginsburg memes, cementing the iconic internet image of RBG in her black robes, her white jabot, that's the lacy thing around her neck, and a gold crown on top of her head. This fall, Notorious RBG is now a book, a biography of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, co-written by Shauna and MSNBC political reporter Erin Carmon. I called up Erin to talk about the RBG fandom. And so when did you become a fan of RBG? Do you remember when she was first on your radar?
The first Ruth Bader Ginsburg meme that I ever saw, and the point at which I was like, oh, duh, of course, was on November 2012. It was Election Day, and it was her National Gallery portrait, and it said next to it, Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not survive cancer twice without missing a day on the bench so that you could stay home and watch Law and Order instead of voting.
The Ruth Bader Ginsburg memes resonate because behind the cute image of a Supreme Court justice wearing a crown or made into a sparkling rainbow gif is real, serious work. RBG has been a dedicated lawyer for 50 years. She's had a hand in pushing for gender equality since back in the 1960s and 70s, and she keeps on trucking today. That's not just funny, that's really powerful. Or as Erin puts it,
as a young fellow Jewish, fellow opera fan, feminist, interested in the law and interested in reproductive rights. I mean, I think it's just really inspiring that somebody could have that body of work and stay so passionately committed to the cause of equality and still be on the highest court in the land.
RBG has been working on important issues for decades, but it's her well-written dissents and high-profile cases in recent years that have made thousands of people identify with her and become genuine fans. And all the energy around RBG as an icon will hopefully make people pay attention to the legal realities she's working with.
Our hope is that it draws people into the work that she's committed her life to. You know, part of it is fun, and I think all social movements need fun. you know, even people who are passionately committed to social change like to kick back every once in a while. And I think our generation of younger women doesn't see a need to choose between being fun and substantive. That said, you know, we've engaged substantively in our book in the cases partly because these issues are very much unfinished. And so if people pay attention to all the issues that are at stake, whether it's through their political process or through the court, we would consider that a massive win. Many of the battles that she fought in the 70s are not yet done. So, you know, if making Ruth Bader Ginsburg cool draws us more deeply and more profoundly into those battles, I think that would be a really good thing.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is certainly aware of the newfound fandom around her. The notorious RBG book is now for sale in the Supreme Court gift shop, and the justice herself says she has bought several notorious RBG t-shirts.
She had to ask her clerks who the notorious B.I.G. was, and now she happily notes that they're both from Brooklyn.
That's really funny.
It's interesting because throughout the 80s, she was told that her feminism was outdated and irrelevant because it focused on equality rather than men and women being different. So I personally think that there's a kind of justice to the fact that young feminists see a lot of the relevance in her feminism now. I have to think that that feels good after being told, you know, we don't need you anymore. And it's not so frequent to see women who are older and women who are over 80 who are still, you know, in their prime work, who are being celebrated as heroes as opposed to being invisible or shunted off to the side.
Erin points out that the biggest reason why RBG has been able to gain so many fans is because of the grassroots nature of the internet. In a different era, the millions of people who think her legal opinions are spot on might never see her celebrated joyously in the news.
And she's not seeking our attention. And I think people appreciate that they themselves can choose their own heroes now that there are fewer gatekeepers telling us, you know, this is who you're supposed to idolize. These are people who are spontaneously choosing to celebrate her, and the media is following along.
Any decision to use contraceptives is not propelled by the government. It's the woman's autonomous choice informed by her doctor. Approving some religious claims while deeming others unworthy could be perceived as favoring one religion over another.
On Wings, you're listening to podcast segments from the website bitchmedia.org. Today's topic is fandom. You just heard a segment about U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the adulation she inspires. Up next is an interview with a journalist who's a serious gamer. The host, again, is Sarah Merck.
When you hear the words video game fan, who comes to mind? You might think of somebody who looks like the Simpsons comic book store guy.
Oh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
When I Google image search gamer or video game fan, the photos of people on the first page of the results are all guys, with the exception of a couple photos of sexy female models wearing costumes that look like Nintendo Game Boys. Also, can we talk about how it's called a Game Boy? I never thought about being a girl who liked playing Tetris on a Game Boy when I was a kid. But now, as an adult, the idea of women and girls not being the typical video game fan is frustrating. People who don't play games sometimes think that video games are a nerdy niche industry. I hate to break it to you, but about 156 million Americans play video games, about half of whom are women. It's a $21 billion industry. In 2013, the video game industry made twice as much as the film industry. So it's a huge part of our media and our pop culture. And while there are millions and millions of fans, the identity politics of who considers themselves a video game fan are complicated. Journalist and gamer LaToya Peterson is putting together a new documentary series for the website Fusion about gender in gaming.
Gamer has become a loaded term. I never had a problem with the word. It was what I grew up hearing. For me, gamer was a word with power. It was an affiliation. It was a way to tell others that I, too, loved games. But, just like with any other label, the term gamer is weighed down with baggage.
I called up LaToya to talk about her experience as a video game fan and how gaming fandom has evolved.
Hi, I'm LaToya Peterson. I am the editor and owner of RageLicious.com and the editor-at-large at Fusion, where I have been producing a series about girls who game called Girl Gamers.
Awesome. And you're a video game fan yourself. Can you talk to me about...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk to me about when you started playing video games and when you started identifying as a fan?
Yeah, so I started playing video games in 1989. I remember the exact moment. It was because my father had bought a Super Nintendo, it was a regular Nintendo Entertainment System. He had bought the first one that had the Duck Hunt Super Mario combo pack and the gold cartridge Legend of Zelda. And I was forbidden from touching it. He was like, do not go into the room. Do not come and try this thing. But my dad was at work until I think 5 or 6. And so when I would come home from school, I would totally just sneak into this room and play and just be like really just, you know, losing myself in this world. And my younger sister, who at the time was just born, so she was born in 89, so she must have been 4 months or 5 months. She cried terribly except for when I was playing Mario Brothers or Zelda. She didn't like Duck Hunt, but Mario Brothers or Zelda. And so she was totally my accomplice in it. And so years and years later, it's great. I wasn't surprised when she got into animation and design. She doesn't do that now. It's her job. But she ended up getting into animation and design and having all these weird random video game things that I like to say I contributed to early, because that's what she grew up watching. So that's how it started. And then it just continued. It just never really stopped. I always felt like there was going to be a time when I would get out of it, and it just hasn't happened.
Did your dad ever find out that you were illicitly playing his video games?
Oh, yeah. I got in total trouble for that the first time. But it kind of just kept happening. And at some point, my dad gave up on trying to guard the console, because at some point, my cousins would come over. Then there were 8 of us trying to bang around on his stuff. So at some point, he just gave it up and he would just buy a ton of games for us. I think he picked them at random, honestly. We got the most random stuff. There's a reason why a lot of times when I talk about my first gaming memories, it's always Doom and Abe's Odyssey and Sonic and Crash Bandicoot. It's literally my dad would just grab stuff and stick it in the basement and be go play, leave me alone. And then he had his treasured games for his friends that stayed in the room. And those were the ones that we couldn't touch from there. So, you know, he eventually, I think, learned to work around it.
You're producing this series for Fusion about girl gamers, and the first episode digs into the word gamer. Let's just listen to a clip from it right now.
I identify as a gamer, and to me, the term gamer just means someone who plays games. That's it.
I don't identify as a gamer. I think of myself as someone who plays games, but I don't think of myself as a reader or a watcher of movies, and so I don't think of myself as a gamer either.
I do, yeah. But I also identify as an artist and a lot of other things. So, you know, we're complex individuals.
This little experiment was fascinating.
So can you talk to me about when you first realized that there were some social and political politics around who identifies as a gamer?
Yeah, it took me forever because I'm an old gamer, right? I'm not Atari old or arcades old or pinball only old, but I'm still fairly old, right? I still remember when multiplayer meant couch play. It meant that you and your friends came over and you had 4 controllers, right? Or, you know, it meant a LAN party. It meant that specific thing. The internet was slow in our day. And so, you know, it was very dedicated people who were playing the online PC games. It took me a long time to realize that gamer was a complicated word. I had never heard anybody against the term. I had never heard anybody angry about the term. There was a lot of the are you really a gamer type policing that tends to happen. But, you know, that's anytime you play with new guys, they're like, oh, are you really a gamer? Are you sure you're a gamer? And then, yeah, actually. So I never really felt any kind of complication with the term. I've always identified as a gamer. That's how I found other gamers. It was cool. And it wasn't until, honestly, I started doing the documentary because I was thinking about the question that I ask everyone more in terms of do you feel like you're a gamer? Do you feel like, you know, there's a different word or a better word to judge you? Or do you feel like men challenge you as being a gamer? I didn't realize the term gamer itself was going to be a problem, and the fact that people didn't identify with it and they didn't relate to it in the same way was really eye-opening for me. And so that's why I started literally asking everybody, because the first 2 people I asked were like, hell no, I'm not a gamer. And then I was like, man, am I out of, what happened? Did I miss something? And it turns out it ended up being almost half and half, consensus-wise, of yes, I'm a gamer, no, I'm not a gamer.
And these are all people who play video games.
And most of them make them too. So I'm like we're talking about like elite levels where people know how to do this, and they're still like, no, I'm not a gamer. And it's weird because like before, like I used to write for this all girls gaming mag called Cerise that was run by Andrea Rubenstein and Robin Fleming. This is back in like 07, like 90 million years ago in internet time. And it was interesting because Robin identifies as a gamer, but she had a column called Robin Can't Jump. And it was all about like her not being able to complete video games, even though she really loved them. And that's also a really common experience that I feel like a lot of people don't talk about, which is kind of like you love games and you like the experience of them, but maybe you're just not very good at them. And so I could see why like people like Liz and whatever said they always associated it with hyper-competitiveness in gaming. Like that's definitely a part of it. But it doesn't have to be, I think.
So do you have a good community of video game fans around you and yourself, or are you not really part of the community because it can be gross sometimes?
Well, like I said, I'm an old school player. And so most of the people I met who gamed, I met in real life and I met in person and they became my friends. And then some of them I met through the blogosphere and they became my friends. But it was very little of like finding people randomly. Like true story, the girl cram and guru that I still kind of hang out with, I mean like time at this point, it's been a decade. And so like literally one person just moved across the country and then two of the girls kind of aren't friends anymore. You know, it's dynamics like every other friend group. But I literally met one of my closest friends on Friendster because I typed in my zip code and video games. And I just wanted to find other girls. Because at that point, I think I was playing with almost exclusively guys. And that's cool sometimes, but not cool other times. And some of the times it was not cool was like there was one guy's house in particular that I used to call a porn pit. And like we would go down into his basement. It smelled really weird. And there was like all these copies of like Black Tail and Smooth. Like I read everything that Melissa Ford has ever written because of that.
So how do you feel like being a video game fan has changed over the years? Like for you personally, does your fandom feel the same now as it did when you were still a kid sort of sneaking into your dad's room? Or does it feel totally different?
It feels similar, right? There's still that weird, giddy excitement when there's a new game that you're looking forward to playing. There's still that awesome feeling of accomplishment. But it's just different, you know, like our lives are different. I think one of the things that I love about my friend Jamin Warren's mag, Killscream, is that they started trying to tackle this idea of like, what does it mean to be an adult gamer? And how like, you know, your life has dramatically changed. I'm not 16 anymore. I don't have 50 hours a week to put on games. Like I don't, that's not happening anymore, right? I'm a mom, I got a job and I got a blog. Like I don't have time. And so the relationships are with the games is just very, very different, but still deep and I really enjoy it. I'm saddened by some of the stuff that I see, but it's more like industry stuff, right? Like, you know, moving away from local multiplayer to have online. And some of my friends like violently disagree with me about this too, just FYI, like not everybody has the same view. I like the camaraderie of like sitting on a couch with people, trash talking next to them, like being in that same space. I don't feel the same way online. And I don't like how like so many more things are pushing. So like now everybody has, both people have to own the game. Both people have to own the consoles. Both people have to, like a lot of the gaming that I grew up with was about sharing. You know, Bonnie, like you made a lot of friends that I think you wouldn't have normally made if it wasn't for like this one shared kind of weird hobby that you used to have. So that part of games culture is kind of going downhill a little bit. And there aren't shared spaces anymore like arcades, and arcades aren't as plentiful as they used to be.
That's so interesting though. That's such a good point that gaming has gone from being something that's really shared. And I think a lot of people who grew up playing video games feel that too. I grew up playing with my brother and it being like an interactive experience between us, accomplishing something together in this video game. Versus now, it can be much more of a solo project where you're alone, you're in maybe a video games are so much more complicated and have such big expansive worlds that are fun to explore on your own. And you're right that there's just less of that shared space, people coming over to play video games. Yeah,
it's just, it's not culturally significant anymore in an interesting way. I don't know what that's going to do to next gen. I mean, at the same time, like the benefit of the internet is literally you can play with anybody anywhere. And a lot of people do, you know, make those bonds. The girl that I talked about who just moved, like she moved because she met her new boyfriend in a game that they were playing. It's an MMORPG. And so she's moved across country to go be with this guy now, which is, yeah, it happens. But it does facilitate these like wonderful connections and interesting things. It's just that, I don't know, like I think it depends on what kind of culture you want. And I feel like particularly like this more anonymized online culture, it gives rise to like what a lot of people associate with gaming, which is like, you know, this ridiculous levels of harassment. And it's weird because I feel like for this generation growing up, they haven't seen a world where that didn't exist. And so it's strange, right? Like, it's just really, really strange for me to know that I'm 32 and my conception and my perception of video games is going to be totally different than someone who is, you know, like 20 and under, just because of those shifts in like the internet, anonymous commenting, group play online. Like, I was playing Journey with my son, and I didn't realize that if you were connected to the PS4 network, other players from Journey will come in and play with you. Like, you don't interact with them, you don't talk to them, like, they kind of just roll around. And it's cute and it's very fun. I like that part of it. But that could have easily not worked out as beautifully with other players kind of coming into your game randomly and just being like, hey, I'm just going to hang out. And so it's an interesting thing for me to think about, because it's easy for me to think about games as this welcoming and loving space, because that was, for the most part, what I experienced. And I'm not sure younger people will have that same experience.
Well, before we go, I know you have to run. What are you a big fan of right now?
Oh, my God. What am I doing right now? So in terms of on the indie games, okay, I'll talk. So I'm a console player. That's been my big thing. I'm a console player. And so the stuff I've been playing on the console, I've been replaying Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy X-2, just because it's literally been a decade since I played it last. I was in a completely different relationship, totally different time in my life. And so it's interesting to go back and be back in Spira, but at the same time kind of be in a very different life space. So I've been playing through that, and I'll probably end up replaying to Shadow Hearts Covenant, which was one of my favorite games, and I'm starting to forget why it was my favorite. So I'm like, okay, time to replay that. Newer stuff, I'm playing Journey, and I'm probably going to cop Mirror's Edge when it comes back out, because I'm super looking forward to it. I just read an interview with one of the level designers, and I was like, yes. In terms of indie games, I have been kind of totally addicted to Jane Friedhoff's game, who's in the documentary series. Jane's game is called Slam City Oracles, and it's a game that's kind of based in Riot Girl. And it's like, if you want to just kind of slam together and break stuff up, and it's multiplayer, and it's local multiplayer, so you can play with people in your area and around you. And you know, it's this awesome Riot Girl soundtrack and these gorgeous colors. It kind of looks like Katamari. And you just kind of bang into things as these little blocks, and you keep, you know, banging. And if you slam into your friend, you both end up going higher, and you both end up being able to break bigger stuff. It's just a ridiculous amount of fun with an amazing soundtrack. And I've been enjoying that a lot, too.
That was journalist and gamer LaToya Peterson. You can see that gender and gaming video series at fusion.net.
That was journalist and feminist gamer LaToya Peterson, interviewed by the online editor of Bitch Media, Sarah Merck. Bitch Media's mission is to provide and encourage an engaged, thoughtful, feminist response to mainstream media and popular culture. You can find their work online at bitchmedia.org. Sarah Merck is the online editor of bitchmedia.org. Her bio on the page says she lives much of her life on the internet, but after hours she likes to make comics, consume entire newspapers, and talk to strangers. In August 2014, she published a non-traditional dating guide titled Sex from Scratch: Making Your Own Relationship Rules. She grew up in a small town and is thankful that her parents are feminists. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. And please check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose latest book is titled The Gift in the Heart of Language. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.